welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
Well, it's been a great month of November for our Leafs. When we're recording this podcast, we're still in November, just before the Ducks game. And the Leafs have a 6-game win streak on the road. And are 11-2 in November. The 11 wins is actually a franchise record, so that's pretty cool. And tonight they'll be going after win number 7 on the road, and that will also be a franchise record. So yeah, we're doing good.
Well, let's hope the streak continues with the win tonight versus Anaheim. It'll make it all the more special with it being Jason Spezza's 1,200th game. So let's hope they can get a win for them, for him. And according to Austin Matthews, the player dress code has gone back to suit and tie, and that may be why they're winning. So hopefully they dress to the nines tonight and get another win.
Yeah.
So before we get into the show, we just want to send out that little reminder that if you have any questions or comments about the Leafs that you want to give your thoughts on, please, please, please DM us on social media or email us at ladiestalkinleafs@gmail.com. We're always, always happy to hear from you and include any of your comments in our show. So with that, we have a great show coming up. So let's get to it, starting with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And roll in the Ladies Talkin' Leafs highlight reel. And then we'll end off with the third period, where we're excited to have Toronto Star Sports journalist and author Damian Cox as our guest. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
Okay, the good, the bad, the ugly. So my good actually is Wayne Simmonds. So yeah, he's, as Syl mentioned to me the other day, he's been in our doghouse a little bit over the past little bit. And yeah, so he was actually, what I think turned it around was when he was a healthy scratch against the Sabres. Ever since that happened, that kind of, I think, surprised him. And yeah, he's just been his... He scored the game-winning goal versus the Sharks the other night, which was finally he got that goal. And yeah, he's been making some slick moves with the puck, and the opportunities to score have always been there over the past couple of weeks. He just haven't been able to put it in until Friday night. So, and the other thing I think too, which we didn't mention, I think it was just after we released our last show, but they got Kyle Clifford from St. Louis, and I think that, because he's basically a similar style, let's just say, to Simmonds, I think that kind of internal competition, it kind of got the fire going again to the Wayne train. So yeah, so he's my good.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. That's actually a really good point about Kyle Clifford, in that maybe, you know, the timing of this is that's why it's always good to have internal competition, because yeah, you need somebody pushing you to, you know, bring out the best sometimes. And I agree. Wayne Simmonds has been playing much better of late, and glad to see that he finally got on the scoreboard as well.
Yeah. And it's good to have, I think, Kyle Clifford too, because in case of injury, because we know Simmonds has gotten injured before, and in case of injury, getting closer to the playoffs, we need that style of player, that gritty player, that has experience. That it's good to have that in the lineup, and the internal competition, obviously. But what's your good, Syl?
So my good is Austin Matthews, but not for the reasons that we all might think. My good is basically not just Austin Matthews, but mic'd up Austin Matthews. I thought that was amazing how they had him set up with the microphone, and seeing his and hearing his reactions to things. Yeah. This is something that I think the NHL needs to do more of. I mean, we often see this kind of thing during All-Star game festivities, that type of thing. But just seeing it in like a regular game situation where they're not kind of on, you know, performing like they would for in an All-Star game situation. I thought that was great fun. And I mean, we see his personality with his celebrations and things like that. I want to see more of that. So yeah. I love that.
Yeah, no, that was cool. I liked the way he was the one that pointed out that Nick Ritchie did the screen on the goal sort of thing. He's trying to showing that he's trying to support the teammates, all of them. Mm-hmm. And so that's good to see. And yeah, I just wonder how they language wise, like, I guess I guess they choose obviously their spots and how to like clip the right spots or thing or to get it in the right area. But yeah, no, I think it's great for fans to see that, like the in-game action.
Definitely.
Like
we get so little access to players nowadays, and especially too, you know, like, you know, Twitter or social media is a vehicle that a lot of people use. It's not the best vehicle for them to use because they get just way too much abuse. But this is a one-way, you know, demonstration that where we get to see something without them having to worry about like the negative repercussions from that as well. And I don't know, I just, especially now during this time, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what it would be like on a night where it's not going so great, I guess. But I thought it was great. So anyway, let's move on to the bad. So who is your bad, Christine?
So the bad that I have again is, this time it's just Jake Muzzin. Last time we had, a couple of shows ago, we had the pairing of Muzzin and Hull, but, this time it's just Jake Muzzin. I just think this guy needs to be put on a little bit of load management. I think we need him, for the playoffs, and he just looks slow still. I mean, he's actually played a little bit better, I think, in the last couple of weeks.
I agree, because I haven't noticed him that much.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But I just think he says he's not injured. I mean, he said that before, and we all know the competitor he is. He wants to play, definitely. Like, he's driven guy that he just doesn't want to be taken out of the lineup. But sometimes that load management is, it would help in some cases. Even with Simmons, that healthy scratch that he had a couple of weeks ago versus the Sabres, that was probably load management for him. These older players, mm-hmm. I think it resets their mind in a way, sort of, and just gives them that extra day. But especially on back-to-backs, like the one that's coming up on the weekend, with Minnesota and Winnipeg coming up this first weekend of December, I think... like that kind of thing. That's the way you can get, maybe give Dermott a chance to come in, mm-hmm. And maybe move up Sandin and see what he does in a second pairing, because mm-hmm. everybody is so impressed, and rightfully so. Sandin's doing really well. So it just allows Sheldon Keefe to, I guess, look at different pairing combinations too, sort of thing, and get Dermott in the lineup. But I don't think it's going to happen, but he's, I don't know. He just needs to improve a little bit more.
I do agree that, I mean, they've done such a great job with Spezza, with managing his minutes and stuff. You know, I don't know why they couldn't do the same, you know, with some of these guys,
Yeah, he plays an important role. Obviously, he plays penalty kill.
So that's the thing. It's like his time on ice is a lot higher. And
it's against the tougher, a lot tougher,
more difficult. Yeah. So having a complete game out would be, I mean, I think it would probably take buy-in from the players to basically realize that just because they're being taken out, it's not a punishment, because that is the number one way that coaches dole that out. So it's their first thought, because throughout their playing days, whether they were in peewee hockey or in the NHL, that these punishments are doled out that way, right?
Yeah.
So to kind of get their head wrapped around that we're doing this for you, not against you, that's something that will take a little bit of doing, I think, on the coaching front for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, so Anyhow, from what I know, Syl doesn't have a bad.
I don't have a bad.
Because it's been a pretty good couple of weeks.
I normally say Engvall, but yeah. I can't really say that right now because he's actually played pretty good on this stretch over on the West Coast. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a break, and I'm not going to dig in on him in my bad this time around. So I don't really have anything bad to say. I mean, what can you say bad? Things are going pretty well and they're playing great right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. And also we both don't have an ugly, which means we have a lot of options for the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel. So let's roll it.
All right. So here we go. In our number three spot, we've already talked a little bit about him, is Wayne Simmonds. We've been waiting for Simmer to show some more energy and give us a little bit more offense, and he has 4 points in the last five games, which is awesome. So he finally scored versus the Sharks, as we mentioned, ending a 17-game goalless streak, but he's had so many opportunities in the last few games that we knew it was only really a matter of time that he would get on the board. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's not much more we can say about him. I think we've covered it, but he's turned it around, and let's just hope he stays healthy and he keeps it going, and maybe the load management thing is going to come up again for him and it'll help him. I did hear that he worked with Barb Underhill in the summertime for his skating too. So, he said that's been helping him a lot, and the fact that his role is a little bit different this year, sometimes it just takes time for a player to adjust that way. So, yeah, it looks
definitely
good for
agree with
Simmer.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So number two is the kid in goal, Joseph Woll. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what can we say about the 23-year-old goalie? He gets his first win, NHL win versus the Sabres, and he follows that up with a shutout versus the Islanders. And then he has a really strong game versus San Jose and gets another win. The last Leaf goalie to win his first three starts, this really brought me back, was Damien Rhodes. I was like, yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely, I mean, the guys have played well in front of him, except for that Sabres game, I would say. But that San Jose game on the Friday night in the third period, like, he made a few big time saves in that third period. The guys kind of slacked off a little bit in front of him, but what'd you think of?
Oh, I definitely agree, and I think that I love. You know, it's bad for Mrazek. I'm not sure if he's ready to come back or what's the story there, but I think that this is super important because if you look around the league at teams that have a number one starter kind of thing, they are grooming their younger, in-house talent to back up and then one day ascend. And the thing is we've got some young guys in the fold for goaltending and we need to see what they have. And you're not going to see that, bringing them up every now and again. I think that you also need to fuel his confidence because if he's just sitting on the bench and he doesn't get any time, you know, that's not going to do much for him. If he goes back down to the Marlies, this is just going to pay off dividends down the road for building his confidence. And then when he goes down there, he's going to be able to build on it. So I think it's fantastic that this is happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gives us Sheldon Keefe and the team, basically the option, like in the playoffs, if there's some injuries that happen, at least you're not looking at Hutchinson.
No. And you know that this guy's going to give you good minutes. So.
You have confidence. Yeah.
All right. 100%. All right. So number one on our highlight reel is John Tavares, JT. Back in episode 4, we said we wanted to see more from our captain, and he has certainly delivered over the last couple of weeks. I think we can both agree. So as of Sunday, before the Ducks game, he is leading the team in points with 20, 10 goals, 10 assists, which basically... Is that not his career
in
a nutshell?
Exactly.
Like, totally.
Yeah.
He's been responsible for all three zones and he's going into the dirty areas in front of the net where we are very accustomed to seeing him in the past. So he's looking like he's feeling good, playing great. I'm pretty happy. And as Austin Matthews says that, he loves him too. And so do we.
Yeah, no, he just seems to be, JT just seems to be a little bit quicker onto the puck and getting into the corners and coming out with the puck and making plays in tight the way he always does in front of the net. And he's fifth in the league in faceoff percentage at 59.9%. So he's doing good that way as well. So yeah, he's our captain's definitely giving us what we wanted. He's listening to the show, basically.
Yeah. Okay, so with that, we're going to move on to our final segment, the third period, where we have a special guest.
So we're honored today to have a special guest with us for our segment, the third period. For over 30 years, Damian Cox has been a sports journalist with the Toronto Star. He's a broadcaster, and he's also an author, having written a few books, including one called A League of Our Own, The Story of the NHL's First All-Canadian Division, which he co-authored with Andrew Podnieks.
So you can find the book exclusively at Indigo, and we're going to talk about it right now. So welcome, Damian, and thank you so much for coming on our show.
Well, thanks for inviting me. This is quite an honor, and you guys have been out there stirring it up and getting Leaf fans interested in what you have to say for a while now. So I'm excited to be part of it.
Well, thank you so much. You. We are actually really thrilled and honored to have you. So we're going to get into Leaf talk. Don't worry, because that's what we do around here. But before we do that, we have some questions for you about the book. So the book highlights the unique 2020-21 NHL season and tells stories past and present of the seven Canadian teams. What audience are you, who did you really write this book for? What audience are you hoping to attract with this book?
Well, I mean, really, it was written for Canadian hockey fans and designed in such a way that there would be something there for fans of all seven Canadian teams. That was sort of the idea because, I mean, there had never been an NHL Canadian division. Well, there had been something called the Canadian division, but it had always had at least one American team in it. So never before had there been a division made up in NHL history of just Canadian teams. So that was interesting in and of itself. We're in the middle of COVID, which is what created this unique situation. And I think it what we wanted to mine was kind of the relationships between the seven Canadian teams, not just currently, but their history. And, you know, what does Vancouver have in common with Winnipeg, and what does Montreal have in common with the Edmonton Oilers? And of course, you know, Toronto being one of the sort of the two ancient teams along with Montreal. And so it was kind of ambitious what we were trying to do in terms of linking it all together in one novel season. But hopefully it turned out all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I found it really interesting, the back and forth between talking about the season, the last year, right, the 2021 season, and the history of the teams. A lot of things I learned about the different teams themselves, like the Canucks and their history and how they thought they got screwed, basically, for another word, with the draft when they first came into the league. And different stories like that were really interesting. So I think it appeals to even like wide variety of age ranges too, but
yeah, definitely people that are past and present fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and something you always wonder what is of, you know, where you fit in the demographics of hockey fans. And I always kind of chuckle when someone tells me about, well, what about, you know, way, way, way back, right in, you know, 1999. 1999. You know, I've been watching the league for 30 years by 1999, and so, you know, each team has two chapters, and so, you know, tried to do something much older. So, with let's say the Winnipeg Jets, tried to do something on the history of Winnipeg getting a franchise and of hockey in Winnipeg. You know, the host of the third game of the 72 Summit Series, and then, you know, later on with when Winnipeg lost their team to Phoenix. And so tried to keep that pattern up with each and every team, I hope it's not too confusing and I hope people follow it. But, you know, it really does, I think. I mean, that was the basic issue, was that this to me was a historic season. And if you're going to write about a historic season, you need to have elements of history connected to it. So that was the idea.
Yeah, obviously you need to have that context. So, go ahead, Chris.
So the next, we are a Leafs show here, obviously. So I picked out something that you noted in the book where you mentioned Auston Matthews and the incident he had with the female security guard in Arizona in 2019, which nobody now remembers anyways. It doesn't come up. I haven't heard it until I read this in the book. And but do you believe that Matthews was the first choice for the Leafs to be the captain? Do you think so?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, even this year, I wrote a column for the Toronto Star earlier this year, not saying that John Tavares shouldn't be captain, but, you know, wondering whether he was the right choice for captain. I mean, Auston Matthews is the leader of that team.
Yes.
But sometimes the leader of the team isn't always the captain. You know, I think no one would argue that back in 93, that, you know, Doug Gilmore was the leader of that team, but Wendell Clark was the captain.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I mean, who knows? It may turn out all right in the end. I think ultimately, assuming Auston Matthews eventually signs a long-term extension and plays for the Leafs for another decade, ultimately he will be the captain. But, you know, it is just a letter. And it's funny the way things turn out sometimes. And it may well be that sparing Matthews the extra responsibility of being captain because of circumstances and the way it happened, A, spurned him to do all the things he did last year, lose that weight, get in great shape, and then win the Rocket Richard Trophy, and ultimately may make the early part of his career a little less pressure filled, if that's possible, in Toronto. So sometimes even events that go funny turn out well for both the player and the team.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's possible that it just wasn't the right time for him yet either.
Right.
And maybe the accolades that he's going to achieve, maybe that's actually better for him to do now without the C. And it could make him a better captain down the road.
Right. I mean, look at, I don't think it's that, and not just because they're both Americans, but it's not that hard to look at comparisons between Auston Matthews and Jack Eichel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jack Eichel got the captaincy very early, all the responsibility that went with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, as the team went sideways and didn't work out, I'm not sure he had the individual maturity or the ability to hang in there. And then of course the injury and everything else went from there.
Yeah.
So, it's funny, you know, this naming 20 and 21 and 22 year old players captain is a relatively new phenomenon. Well, I don't know who started it.
I think it might've started with Sid, actually.
It used to be back in the day that you had to have paid your dues for a significant period of time. I don't know how old Daryl Sittler was when he took over from Dave Keon, but I think he probably would have been 23 or 24. So asking these young guys to be captain, have these incredible salaries of $10, $11 million, and then do all that's necessary to do to grow up, live in a big city, and perform every night, you're asking a lot. And you know, maybe with Jack Eichel, it didn't work. And maybe by the flip side, I mean, you watch Auston Matthews play every night and you think this is a guy who's pretty comfortable and becoming more comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely agree. Okay. We're going to switch gears a little bit here. Still Leaf related. You know, are you surprised we picked out all these Leaf things from your book? Anyway.
I expected it.
So you noted a couple of Leaf players that had big roles as part of Team Canada in its history. So Paul Henderson scoring the winner in the 72 Summit Series, Daryl Sittler scoring the tournament winner in the 1976 Canada Cup. Do you think any of the Leafs will make Canada's Olympic team coming up for the Beijing Olympics? And if so, who do you think is going to make the biggest impact?
No, isn't that interesting? Well, I mean, the obvious one is Mitch Marner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easier to talk about today after he scored two goals last
year.
But I mean, he's certainly a candidate. Yeah. He's going to be right there. I think Jake Muzzin has been involved before. You know, will he be a candidate this time around? Hard to say. Beyond that, I mean, John Tavares has also been, a key part of Team Canada in years past. Will he, you know, I mean, we've got so many good young players in the game right now.
Totally.
So yeah. I think they'll be candidates. I think as a whole, the Leafs could end up with quite a few players playing in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Jack Campbell for the Americans, Austin Matthews.
You think Jack Campbell will get consideration now?
Well, he would have to.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so good right now.
Yeah.
He would have to get consideration. Now, how serious that consideration is, what's going on with Team USA is a little bit up in the air because of Bill Guerin's situation. There's a lot left to be figured out there. And you know what? The Americans have a lot of great players too, but mm-hmm. when you have a player who's putting up numbers like Jack Campbell is, someone has to pay serious attention.
I agree. Even if he's like the third goalie, I actually think that having our players going to the Olympics, like on various different teams, like you said, we're going to have a lot of players that do end up on teams throughout all the different nations. I actually think it could be a really good thing for us going forward, you know, barring any injuries, knock on wood, going
Let's hope
into the
Olympics
second
half
go of the season. Hmm? Yeah.
Let's
well,
hope
that's
the
other
Olympics
thing, right?
happens with yeah. what's been going on. But mm-hmm. I just was hearing that on the radio, too. But
I suppose.
Right. I think it's always surprising and hard to predict what players will, you know, get a benefit out of being in the Olympics and what players don't. I mean, it's a long way to go.
Yeah.
There's going to be jet lag involved. As you mentioned, injuries can happen.
Well, John Tavares, perfect example.
John Tavares.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, as a general rule, I think the players seem to really take being on the Olympic team as a real honor. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you get a guy who hasn't been on an Olympic team before, like Jack Campbell, or like Mitch Marner, it becomes a huge, it changes how they think about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the same time, Leaf fans will remember when Pat Quinn was the coach and he had to make the decision to take Curtis Joseph out of the net and put Martin Brodeur in the net mm-hmm. in 2002. That created some real difficulty.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for Cujo in Toronto, basically.
Yeah. And they all tried to patch it up and cover it mm-hmm. over there. But, well, I was there. Everybody knew what had happened. And I was no Pat Quinn fan, really, but I give him credit for making that choice because he put the interest of the team first, not the interests of his own team. And that's not always an easy thing to do. And hasn't always been done in the past. So I give him a lot of credit for that decision.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So before we get into some Leaf talk, first about today's Leafs.
I thought we were already doing
Leafs. Yeah, I know.
We're always doing Leafs talk. Let's be real here. Yeah,
exactly. But one last question about this Canadian division that we had last season. It was said that it was the best chance for a Canadian team to win the Cup, which obviously didn't happen. But what Canadian team now do you think has the best chance to win? Who would you say?
Well, I'm going to say the Winnipeg Jets, because I think of all the Canadian teams. Well, I with Carey Price out and his future unclear, you know, having Connor Hellebuyck in goal, having that top guy in goal, gives you an opportunity to win the Cup. Look at what Carey Price did.
Yeah.
Now, Hellebuyck wasn't able to do that last year for Winnipeg. But, you know, that they're playing great hockey right now. Edmonton's playing really well. Toronto is playing really, really well. And then you've got three Canadian teams just playing horribly. And you've got Calgary, which is, you know, I certainly didn't believe that the Flames were going to be that good a team. And now look at what they're doing. And they're getting great goaltending. Yeah. So
yeah, Markstrom is a good goalie. Jacob Markstrom. Yeah, he's good.
This other kid they've got in net has got two shutouts, just like, you know, Joseph Wall got a shutout for the Leafs last night. So
yeah.
I mean, the team I would point to is Winnipeg. But I really believe that those who pointed at the Canadian division last year and said, well, it's not a very strong division, those teams aren't that good. And then Montreal got to the final out of that division. And B, look at those teams and how they're faring this season. I think there's three or four Canadian teams in the top 10 teams in the league. So if you're imagining the possibility of a Canadian team winning the Stanley Cup again, I think we're getting closer. I think I said in 2020 that within the next 5 years, a Canadian team would win the Cup because of all the young stars that had come to the Canadian teams. I would stand by that.
All right. Well, for the Leaf fans out there, then we're still rooting for our Leafs. There's no Jets fans listening to us. In fact, I think we have.
Well, you don't know that for sure.
Maybe not.
I just think the Leafs have, you know, they're sort of where the Raptors were a couple of years ago, and that is they've got to get past the first round.
Yeah,
that's almost their Stanley Cup. Is to get out of the first round.
Yeah.
Once they get out of the first round, you might see a team take a run right to the final. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. But you know, it's a hard trophy to win.
Yeah, for sure.
They've got so many young players. You know, Tampa's winning Stanley Cups, but look at the age of their top players. The Leaf top guys are very, very young. And, you know, you've got to pay your dues. You've got to learn what it takes. And I think as good as Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, Willie Nylander, all these guys are, they're still in my mind. And if you look at the age of teams that lead their teams to Stanley, or yeah, their teams, players that lead their teams to Stanley Cup, they're still very young. So, you know, when I look at Winnipeg, some of their top guys are a bit older. So I hate to tell Leaf fans they might have to be a bit more patient, but you might have to be a bit more patient.
We've waited this long, so we may as well wait a little longer.
and just to add to that point, since we're talking about the Leafs, I live in a house with a house full of Leaf fans. Mm-hmm. And I had this conversation with one of my kids the other day, and I said, I think, you know, you're now in a situation where you've got a good team year after year after year after year. Now, the playoffs are a huge disappointment. I get that. But I think what they're doing now is so much more preferable to having one great season, come out of nowhere, get, you know, make a run to the Final Four, and then be right back down again. I think this is the first time since the mid-1970s that you've got a team with real stability, at all parts of the organization. And when you have that team with all that kind of stability and that kind of success year after year, it seems to me you're bound to make a breakthrough. It may happen this season.
Well, we're hoping for that.
Yeah, we are. So that's for sure. So with that, let's just get into like a little bit more Leaf talk, current Leafs right now. So at the closer to the beginning of the season, we read an article you wrote about the Leafs around the time when they played Chicago, which turned out to be the game where they kind of started to turn things around. So in the article you wrote that something felt wrong and uninspiring about Keefe's team. So now that they are playing better, has your mind changed at all on this?
Well, I mean, I still think, I mean, what I was trying to get at was that there seemed to be a loss of connection between Leaf fans and their team. Leaf fans.
And we've discussed that also on our show too.
Yeah, that they're looking at this team going, we don't necessarily believe in what you're doing anymore. Mm-hmm. And we don't, you know. Now, since then, I think what's really fascinating is you've got a team, a Leaf team, that has kind of changed personalities a little bit. You look at the top 20 scorers in the league, there's no Leafs in there. Mm-hmm. You look at, they're in the bottom third of NHL teams in terms of scoring, but now they're in one of the top teams defensively.
I know, their penalty kill I just saw today is like third in the league.
Yeah, and look at, you know, Joseph. So they go on the road.
Yeah,
play the Islanders last night, play a rookie goalie. He only had to face 20 shots. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what that is showing, is a team that is recognizing that the way they were playing before that was causing this lack of connection, maybe between fans, of whether this was all going in the right direction, that there's now an understanding, look, there's got to be a different way to go about this. And that you're seeing, you know, so often when teams struggle defensively, the goalies get the blame, the defensemen get the blame, and the forwards just sort of get off scot-free. You need that connection between the forwards and the defense playing both ends of the rink. And I think what we're starting to see is more of that, which is why you're seeing Jack Campbell's numbers. So, I mean, God bless Jack Campbell. He's playing great. But there have been a few nights where he looks like he's barely getting any shots. Mm-hmm. I think this is a vastly improved defensive team to this point in the season. Mm-hmm. And I think they're playing a style right now that a lot more Leaf fans are going to trust might have a chance of success next spring.
Well, I hope that's the case. And I hope the Leaf fans are not just, you know, waiting for that playoffs, because to me, like what you're saying, I mean, when the team is having success, I mean, as fans, Chris and I think we both agree that this is something we should be enjoying on a game by game basis. You know, we shouldn't be letting a great season and seeing the way the team is developing and evolving and putting this together. I mean, you're going to miss that if the only thing that you're focused on is the playoffs, right?
I think that's right. I mean, I'm not a fan of the Leafs in the way people are, but mm-hmm. So I sort of look at it from, you know, from a distance, but as someone who has watched the Leafs for 50 some years, they have not always had players like this.
No,
they have not always had, you know, stability like this and ownership like this and management like this and coaching like this. You know, you don't hear people as once was the case of whether it was all about, you know, if only Ballard would sell the team.
No, I know.
Well, you don't have that anymore. You've got legitimate NHL stars playing for this team at a high, high level. One of the challenges they're having is managing the salary cap. Well, they didn't have to do that before. And if you look around the league, I think it's funny, as there are more teams, often it seems to me that the only team some Leaf fans are paying attention to is the Leafs. And if they broaden their perspective a little bit and look what the challenges a lot of these other teams are dealing with, they'll look at their own team and say, geez, we're pretty good. Now, that's not to say, you know, to be a fan is to be passionate and to want to win. And the disappointments of the playoffs in the last few years have been soul crushing. I get that. But I think your point is well made. At the end of the day, yeah, you're a fan, but this is also entertainment. And most of the time, these guys are a pretty good hockey team to watch.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to change my question, actually, from what I wrote down. Because you were talking about team defense and how they have Timothy Liljegren and Sandin as the bottom pairing now. And we've been hearing some rumors that they want to maybe trade Justin Hull or Travis Dermott. But I don't know. The depth on the defense, we've talked about this on other shows. Like, we think it's better that they keep that depth. But do you actually think that Kyle Dubas is good with going with a bottom pairing defenseman like that? The two young guys are 20 and 21, I think. And basically they were saying to get nothing for Justin Hull and Travis Dermott. I don't know. What do you think about that defense like that? Cause you were saying we're strong as team defense, but I guess I'm just not so positive on the young guys yet to go into the playoffs anyways, especially maybe during the regular season, it's fine, but.
Right. Well, and look, I think what the three of us could agree on is that the Leafs are likely to have looked different in the spring than they do right now, because they're going to get to the trade deadline and they'll make a move and they're going to do something. And, you know, you look at a team like Montreal, their season's almost gone. Well, they've got a defenseman like Ben Chiarot on an expiring contract. He's going to be out there and available. Now, whether Montreal would trade him to Toronto, I have no idea. But the point is, if they want to change the makeup of their blue line, they're going to have ample chance to do that. right now, I mean, Justin Holl was in the lineup last night. Travis Dermott wasn't. I think they're giving a lot of these guys an opportunity to really make the case for staying in the lineup and, you know, being part of this group. They have a different view on what they want their defensemen to be able to do. And mostly what they insist on is that they be mobile and puck movers and be able to make plays and, you know, be able to get out of their own zone by moving the puck well. And, you know, did that cost them in the first round last year? I'd say no. You know, it's not like the Canadians were scoring tons of goals on them or making their defense look bad. It was the Leafs couldn't score on
Canada. Yeah, no, it was they basically couldn't make the adjustments on offense to get the goals is what it was, not the defense.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things, the ways to attack that problem is to have more offense created from your blue line. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get more offense from guys like Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren than you are from other types of defensemen. So I think you look at the Leafs, you know, their defense, it's a work in progress in terms of deciding who's going to be there, who's going to be in their top six by the spring. I think they've got pretty good depth, and I think it's starting to show up on a nightly basis with their defensive record. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Well, I think we're going to move on. We're going to do something a little different with you now. So as you know, this is a show for fans. We know that as a journalist, you're supposed to be impartial, but we thought it would be fun for us and our listeners to get to know Damian Cox, the fan. So we have a little quick Q&A for you if you're game.
All right. I'm game.
Okay. Shoot. Take it away, Chris.
Well, don't literally shoot. But no.
Shoot. All right. So I think you already know this question, but who's your favorite hockey player growing up and your favorite team?
David Keown was my favorite hockey player. And I remember being out playing road hockey and, you know, that was a big thing. Who was playing in the game because everybody wanted to be David Keown. And so, he was certainly the guy. I mean, the only games we saw, I grew up in Hamilton. The only games we really saw were were Toronto games, mm-hmm, and occasionally right. Montreal games on a Saturday night. So, you know, I mean, they were the team I saw the most. I spent a lot of time watching Hamilton area junior teams, first the Red Wings and then the Finn Cups. Those were teams that I was passionately a fan of.
Oh, that's cool. That's a really cool thing to know. Okay, so you may or may not know we have a segment that we call On the Road with Chris and Syl. We like to go on road trips following our favorite team. For you is, do you have a favorite road rink that you visited? And if so, do you have a favorite restaurant in that city?
Oh, wow. Okay, so, I mean, the rink that used to be so much fun to go to was the old Chicago Stadium.
Yes.
I'm dating myself a little bit, but it was amazing.
That was actually on our bucket list, but we never got there. We never got there.
Yeah. And Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. Madison Square Garden is fantastic. Those were, I mean, Chicago and New York. Who doesn't want to go to Chicago and New York? Favorite restaurants? I mean, geez, there are always places. There was this Italian place in Edmonton I used to go to all the time, but I don't remember the name. Now you're really testing my memory.
You're a well-traveled guy, so there's probably lots of cool places that you visited. So,
yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the great things about, you know, being around, covering the NHL for as long as I did. I mean, there were only 21 teams in it when I started covering the league. So they've added all these teams. I remember for a while there was a restaurant in San Jose. I can't tell you the name of it, but I used to love, look forward to going to some places in LA and Manhattan Beach. I just can't remember the name of them. That's all. But there have been lots of places that became favorites over the years.
All right. And final one for me, you've reported on the NHL and the Leafs, but what is your next best sport to cover other than hockey?
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of time covering tennis. I went to Wimbledon 10 straight years. I've been to the U.S. Open. I've covered a lot of Canadian Opens, had an opportunity. I mean, during a golden era for tennis with Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray, guys like that. And then the rise of Canadian tennis as well. So, you know, that's been, and been able to cover Davis Cup tennis, you know, for Canada during a period where Canada was really competitive in Davis Cup. So probably tennis, you know, spent a lot of time doing it. So it would be those, and if not there, you know, CFL football did a lot of that. Listen, guys, I've been so blessed over the course of my career. I got to cover so many things in different countries around the world. I could never cover another game again, and I wouldn't say I was shortchanged. I've been really, really lucky.
Well, and we've been so lucky to have you on our show too. So, last question for me. What's your favorite interview that you've ever done?
Boy, I remember the first time I really interviewed Wayne Gretzky.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
It was in his car.
Wow.
Outside the LA practice rink. And so, I mean, and, you know, over the years, Wayne was always accommodating to me. There are lots of media people who are a lot closer to him than I ever was. But he was always accommodating to me, even for my last Leaf book, the one I did on the 93 season. He was great for that one. So, I mean, that's one that sticks out in my mind. I remember my first, when I was, before I was even covering the Leafs, it was the 87 Canada Cup. And I ended up at the Connaught Hotel in downtown Hamilton interviewing the, you know, the head coach of the Soviet Union, Viktor Tikhonov. And that was a memory like that's crazy. How did I end up doing that? I remember the one Olympics, you know, Matt Sundin, and by that point had covered him for a long time, and something, I can't remember the exact scenarios, but basically there was a mob of people waiting to talk to him, and it's in the mix zone, which is basically a mob of people. And he saw me and then came over and gave me a bit of time, knowing that I was a Toronto guy that he knew well. And before he went on, did that. And that always stuck in my mind of what a gentleman he was and how, you know, even look, I mean, on teams he was on, I didn't always write the nicest things or the nicest things about him. But, you know, he was a guy who when you get the respect of somebody like that, you feel like it's that you've kind of been doing it the right way for a long, long time. So, you know, those are just a couple I remember. But, oh, my goodness, there have been so many. I mean, that, that's one of the things I've really enjoyed about doing the job over the years was not so much the ones that came after games, because often they're the least interesting interviews, but really being able to sit down with someone and talk to them and, you know, get their point of view on things. It's a great part of the journalism that we do.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah, you definitely have a long career with lots of people you've talked to. You can't remember everything,
obviously.
I have no
hair. No, I'm all gray. Look at me. I've been around a while.
Oh my God. Yeah. So thank you, Damien, for joining us and giving us the opportunity to talk about your new book, A League of Your Own, A League of Our Own, the story of the NHL's first all-Canadian division, which, again, is only available at Indigo Books.
And for our listeners and followers, with the holiday season coming up, Damien's been kind enough to offer us a copy of his book, which we are going to include in an up-and-coming giveaway for one lucky person. So be sure to follow us on social media and stay tuned for details on that. As a reminder, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and our handle is at LTL1917. So Damien, thank you again for coming on our show with us. We cannot thank you enough. It's been such an honor to have you. And we've really enjoyed this time talking about your book and all of our questions answered on Leafs.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you the honor is it's been all mine. I've been watching you guys for a while. I think it's really cool and unique what you're doing. And all I can say is, I look forward to joining you again someday.
Thank you. We will definitely have you on because it seems we have a lot that we can still talk about and cover. So
except next time I get to ask the questions of you guys. How's
sure,
that?
Sure,
I'm more of a question asker than an answer.
Well, we actually had a lot of fun turning the tables on you then for today.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, and we will talk to you again.
Sounds great.
Thanks.
We would like to thank Damian so much again for joining us for the third period. And now we would like to highlight what's coming up for our Leafs.
Yeah, so over the next couple of weeks, with the exception of Tampa and Chicago, we haven't actually faced any of the teams. So it's going to be interesting. We got Nazem Kadri and the Avs coming to town on Wednesday, which is when we release this episode of the podcast. Kadri, I was looking it up before we came on the show. He is on a heater. He's fifth from what I saw there in league scoring. So that's really good. He has 27 points. And and then on the road, we go on the road this weekend again. We have back-to-back with Minnesota on Saturday night and then Winnipeg on Sunday. So that's going to be a situation where Joseph Woll, I think, gets in again, depending on how Mrazek, I don't think Mrazek is going to be back in time for the weekend, but yeah.
And then the week after that, we come back home to face Columbus, Tampa, and then Chicago on the following Saturday night before heading out on the road again.
On the road again, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks with Travis Dermott, who hasn't played in four games now, and not sure if he's going to be dressing versus the Ducks in Anaheim. And there's also Ilya Mikheyev, the Soup Man, who should be coming back soon. He's been skating quite a bit over the last couple of weeks from what we've heard. And that means a forward is going to have to come out in order to give him an opportunity. So
I wonder if there's any chance that there could be any moves in this next little block, because they're going to have to do something cap wise and personnel wise for sure.
Yeah. So it's going to be a busy couple of weeks ahead, and you can stay updated on everything to do with the Leafs by following us on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is @LTL1917.
And another way to connect with us is at Ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can also support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. You can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
So as always, thank you to our healthcare workers and everything that they do. Thank you for listening. And please follow or subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite app. And we're also up on YouTube as well if you want to check us out there. Mm-hmm.
Stay safe and well, everybody. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Go, Leafs, go!
Leafs, go.